Dearest listeners, this episode was recorded in Arenberg, Antwerp.
Good evening, dear listeners. Today, we're back on Men Talk 2 podcast, a podcast that debunks the stereotype that men don't talk about deep and meaningful conversations. And today, we have a guest speaker with us, a male psychologist. His name is Nisio. And today, he will help us find solutions with our topic of today, which is men's mental well-being. So now I would like to ask you, Nisio, would you introduce yourself and state your profession and your expertise within the field of psychology?
Okay. To begin with, solutions is a big word.
Huh? Okay, yeah. we'll talk about it.
Okay. So my name is Nisio. I'm a clinical psychologist and I'm also a psychotherapist. At this moment, you want to know where I work and what my expertise is.
Yes, actually, what your expertise is.
My expertise is, I worked a lot with youngsters. And I still do work with not so young people anymore, but with parents that have children. So I work for the Flemish government and it's called Kindergezin.
All right.
Our services are there to help people, parents actually, to be the best dad and the best mom they can be for their child. And so I'm talking about children between 0 and 2.5. So these days I work with parents because babies have difficulties to talk.
No, of
have difficulties to talk. They're a bit young to express themselves. So
yeah, exactly.
I get involved when they are like, when parents are challenged by this thing that we call parenthood, which is a challenging job. That's a bit what I do. I used to work as a psychologist, as a therapist. Maybe in the future I will pick that up, but at this moment I'm focused on what I'm doing at this moment.
All right. And like, why did you do the switch between a therapist to a psychologist?
Well, as a psychologist, in my opinion, you're not per definition as a good therapist. So this is an additional course you can follow, which in my opinion can make you a better professional. Okay. Because if you study psychology, it's like a university education, and if you are very good at memorizing things, you will get good grades. But the clinical job, that's something you work on the job, and in addition or let's say and in the meanwhile you do this little major. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I think you can be a better professional. So that's actually the reason. That's actually the main reason why I did this extra major.
Okay.
To become a better professional. Okay. To have better tools.
Yeah.
And insights to be a better professional.
Yeah. Just really a self-investment program, actually.
Yeah, because it was expensive.
I could imagine. Yeah. I mean, I could imagine, you know, like even as a professional like yourself, you know, like there are always new things to learn, like always new tools.
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, you can't really say that at a certain moment you have to stop learning, you know, like you always learn within every profession, I could imagine.
Yeah, it's true. And even stronger, if you do, then if you stop learning, then I think you will not, cannot guarantee quality, because science is still going on. We get better and more insights, so we need to update ourselves to be the best professional we can be.
I like that. And just to align to that, do you like having midnight talks
with people? Midnight talks.
Yes. And by that, you know, like just where you're discussing meaningful meaningful topics, you know, like it could be with friends, it could be with family.
Yeah, but why midnight? We can do this
all during the day. I mean, midnight was just example. It was an example.
Oh, okay, okay. No. I enjoy talking with people about all kind of things. I think it's people are interesting human beings. Even if they have other opinions, it can be an enrichment. So. I do. I talk a lot, actually, to be honest. With my friends, I mean. Professionally.
In terms of men, there are lots of perceptions about men and their lack of talking about their feelings. Like, hearing this, do you find this to be true or do you think it's a myth? And if so, why is this the case?
Well, it's not. There's not a black white answer to this. Huh? You know, there's nature and there's nurture. Huh? Yeah. So neurologically, there are differences between men and women.
Huh? Okay.
Also, yeah, physically and so on. But when we on the topic talking about our emotions, about our well-being and so on,
yeah,
in my opinion, it's more a nature issue. Nurture issue.
Yeah.
And it has to do with socialization. It's about how we are perceived.
Yeah.
I think our society... it's very common to say it's something like this.
Okay.
Like, I was talking to this girl, she's 8 years old today. And it's a daughter of my girlfriend. And I told her, I'm going to see these guys to talk about, actually, I was talking to her mother about this.
Okay.
And she's a very curious girl. So she said, where are you going? So I'm going to talk with some men about if men talk about their emotions, yes or no? And she said, no, they don't. Like, how do you mean they don't?
There's your answer.
How do you know this? Yeah, if I looked at my dad, no, they don't. And it's okay. All right. So she's 8 years old and she already has this idea that men, they don't talk about their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine that she thinks this because she saw a man, in this case, her father, not talking about emotions, but nevertheless, she, her conclusion was, this is a masculine thing.
Ah, wow.
So I think from day one, we need to be very, conscious about this. So, and I think it's a responsibility of parents, but even bigger as that. It's a macro problem. It's a meso problem. It's a micro problem. It's a problem. I think, why do I think it's a problem? Because it is not true. It's not necessarily true. If I would, I have a son, for example.
Yeah.
If I would educate him as you need to be strong, you need to be action, whatever, and talking, that's girlish. You need to be strong and you need to be rational and so on. Okay, then what do you think the outcome will be? Will he be a man that talks about his emotion, about his inner world? Or do you think he will be a guy that will be very straightforward and rational and not having a very high EQ?
I mean, like, would it depend on the approach that you have as a dad to your son? I mean, because perhaps...
That's not enough because they go to school, they have friends,
yeah.
There's family, so there's influences
from everywhere.
So I think that's why I say it's micro, it's meso, it's macro. It's a general problem, cultural problem. I think these days, I see, in my opinion, I see a lot of things changing. I see people, youngsters, talking about all kinds of things, about gender, about emotions, about their doubts and so on. So I think it will be better than in my generation, but nevertheless, yeah. 8 years old, is no. the daughter of my girlfriend. So yeah.
That's already pretty young to be able to come to such a conclusion about.
Yeah, like about directly, men. Like exactly. automatically. Of course not. They don't talk about emotions.
Like, she didn't really have to think about it.
Yeah. Listen, that's a no-brainer. You're going to talk about this? Don't waste your time. I can answer you this question. It was like that. So, yeah.
And now, I actually liked where you're using your son as an example. Mm-hmm. And let's say, because you're a father of how many
children
do you
have? I have a girl and I have a boy.
I have a bun. Okay. So let's say, if you want to actually, you know, like educate your son to be the best man he could be, what are like the tools that you would give him to become a man?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because you're supposing that I want him to be a man. I just want him to be a human with respect for everybody and the best tools I can. That's a very good question, actually. The best tools I can give my both children is to love the other. Oh, wow. If there's one thing I would want to learn them is to be able to love the other.
Yeah.
And there's no distinction between my daughter or my son. So actually, because you were talking about, okay, this is how you want to educate your children, but as I said, they're also influenced by other people and other communities, because my son, for example, he told me once, he was young, he's now 7, maybe he was 5, and he said, I don't like pink. Pink is for girls. I said to him, what? Pink is for girls? Why is pink for girls? Said, that's a color for girls. I'm like, no, it's just a color. The color is not...
it's not linked to a gender.
No. Okay, but I know I told him this, but he was not convinced, because he's so influenced by... Even if you go to a shop, if you go to a shop, a toy shop, you will see that... That there are toys that have a pink box and toys that have a blue box and so on. Yeah. So it's a big and hard job to fight this.
So but actually, in a sort of way, like, society is already indoctrinating us to link these kinds of things, because like, if you're already saying that you're telling your son that pink is for everybody, but then if you're trying to put it in their head and then they still go outside, like you said, and they go to a shop and they see that all the things with the color pink are in the girl section, then would it still be possible to convince your son that he could also be wearing pink without that people will be perceived him as, oh, okay, maybe he is, you know?
Well, I need to adjust my approach, So the alternative is that I tell him, yeah, for some reason there are people that link a color to a gender, which I find weird, and then I explain him why. Like, when I read bed stories for my daughter, for example, it was so amazing how many stories you would read about this prince that was going to save the princess, that was the hero. So it was like they were creating an image of a prince who's a man, who's strong, and who's the savior. He will save the girl. So the girl has this image of somebody who's weak, who has to be saved. So I told her, that's weird, that it's always the man who's gonna save the girl. And this girl, by the way, is always white and blonde. Yeah, so I have a lot of work. I have to fight the stereotype of gender, race, and so on. And
I mean,
so
being
on.
A dad is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Shout out to those dads out there.
As I told you, I said it in the beginning, parenthood is really something challenging.
And you're not getting paid for it.
No. But it was my choice. So,
of course.
I have to deal with it. No, but I think it's the reality. So I need to educate my children to be aware of this.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you're aware of this, then you can think about it and say, "Hey, okay, I'm gonna adjust, or I'm gonna participate, or whatever."
Yeah. So you first of all, you really have to create awareness, like, within your child.
Yeah, I think that's the start. I gotta start on micro level. I can try to be very influential. I can try to be an influencer or something like that, but I'm gonna start with just my kids and with my friends. These are topics I talk with my friends about.
I mean, mostly it starts at home, I would think, you know?
Yeah. But that's not enough. That's not enough.
You know.
I cannot fight this cultural, social reality.
No, of course. And like, what do you think are like other misconceptions about being a man in certain things, you know, like, or what society thinks, you know, it means by being a man? Do you think that there are some misconceptions about that?
Well, misconception is a judgment. What I try to do is just to see, like, for example, as a therapist, what I try to when I talk with my clients, one of the most important thing for me is just to discover who are you and who are the people that surround you and what are their thoughts about love, about marriage, about gender. Because in my opinion, these are things that influence every individual. Maybe it has to do with my environment or the people I meet and people who are my friends, but that's not something I have ever heard. Like, as a man, you need to be protective about your friends or your wife or something like that. But they are very implicit expectations. Like, I wanna put this picture on the wall. Okay. Hey, guy, or hey, husband, you gonna put this picture on the wall? And I am like, this is stereotype. This is like saying, you're the man, so this is more a task you should do. Although physically, I'm perfectly capable of making a hole in the wall and put a picture on the wall. But it's something like very normal. We find this very normal.
Yeah.
We find it very normal that a father decides to keep on working full time. And if a mother decides to work full time, it's like, oh, and what about the kids? Do you see them often? If a dad doesn't see his kids often because he starts working early and he comes back home late and so on, we find this not so crazy. But for a woman, mother, we make a difference. No, people don't say it explicitly. I'm a father. People don't say explicitly like, hey, you're a father. You shouldn't do this. This is changing the diapers. That's a woman's job or something like that.
Yeah.
And also the other way around, because I have a friend, I remember it's just a long time ago. He has a son. He has also a daughter, but I remember when his son, had a dirty diaper, then he said to his wife, your son has a dirty diaper. Can you change it, please? I'm like, wow. You don't only gave your job, this job to your wife, like it's a task for a woman. You also said, your son. Now it's not our son, it's your son. So that, so those are little small things so perceptions, per se think in terms of perception, but in terms of patterns. Okay. So there are patterns we consciously and unconsciously we create them and we keep them alive. Like I remember the first time when I went, when I had a daughter, that was my firstborn. I went, I think the first time we went to a park or something like that. We were at the park and we had to change her diaper, but we forgot it. So I told their mother, I told her, you forgot the diapers. She looked at me and said, what? I forgot the diapers? Okay, damn. Yeah, you're right. We forgot the diapers. So, or a stupid example without nothing that has to do with fatherhood or motherhood, but there are people in our generation less, my generation, because I'm older than you, in my generation less, but in the generation of my father and mother, it was very common that when people would go on holiday, the mother the woman would make the luggage. So can you imagine that tomorrow I'm gonna go on holiday, and I tell my girlfriend, "Hey, you're gonna make the luggage," because she's a woman, whatever the idea is behind this. But these are patterns. So I think we should look at the patterns. Okay. As a therapist, that's what I do. I look to, okay, what are the things? What is the deal in your relationship or in your family? Yeah. What are the, who does what?
Yeah.
And that's very interesting in my opinion, to watch your things.
And sometimes, so like what you're saying is sometimes we're actually following these patterns without that we're actually aware that we're keeping them alive just because they've already been there for generations and generations, or
exactly.
Is it just because we're like, you know, like we're indoctrinated like with these with these patterns just because, you know, like we saw them from our own families perhaps, you know, or we saw them on TV, or and that's perhaps also
I think it's because we saw it, it's because we still do it, it's for several reasons. A typical example, I always take motherhood and fatherhood because there it's for me it's more clear to see the patterns. I remember my mother-in-law, my daughter asked my mother-in-law a candy while I was standing 1 meter away from my daughter and my mother-in-law when she asked this. And the mother of my daughter was, I don't know where she was not around.
Yeah.
The answer of my mother-in-law was, you want a candy? Ask your mother. And I'm like, okay, so healthy food is the mother's department. You cannot ask me. I'm standing like 2 meters from you. You see? So this is, so I can just not react. But by not reacting, I am like being with this pattern. I'm not reacting, and I'm just is and then it will continue, and so on.
And in this scenario, how should you react as a man?
Well, I reacted. I said, "Hey, maybe I can also give permission." Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Also, my job, actually, with Kinteng is in where I work.
Yeah.
It's a very female environment, by the way. So almost all my colleagues are women.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking also about another story. I'm going to park it. I will tell you this. This story is also interesting. So I have a mission. And my mission is that I want to involve the fathers as much as I can. Okay. I will explain what I mean by this.
Okay.
So imagine my colleague, there is, wants to make an appointment with a mother to talk about the baby that has sleeping problems.
Okay.
Then I think it's important that she makes an appointment with the mother and the father, if it's possible, of course. But that's not this reflex. Hey, I made an appointment with the mother, and the colleague doesn't even think about also inviting the father or to ask, will he also be around? Last week I made an appointment with a mother that is pregnant, because we also try to reach parents that haven't given birth yet, just to introduce ourselves and tell them who we are and what we can mean or what we can do for them and what our services are. And so I made an appointment with her. And I said, and will the father be there? I said, oh no. I said, okay, if you want, we can look for another date. So he's also there. You see, that's, so in my opinion, it's very important that we involve them, that we put them in the position of a parent. You're a parent, so you have something to say. This is your child. Well, can I ask you, how do you experience this sleeping problems and so on and so on? So we need to put the people in this position. In this position of you are a parent, or you are, let's talk about emotions. Nothing. Hey, probably it's difficult for you to talk about emotions. No, but the other example I wanted to give was, that was interesting because people cannot see, but I'm a black guy. I will tell you why. It has something to do with the story I'm going to tell. So, as I have a lot of, female colleagues and friends, because psychology is a female environment, I was invited for a bachelor party of a friend, female friend. Okay. So the bachelor party was with only women except me. And it was amazing. So it wasn't a Saturday. It was amazing how many times people said, oh, you're the only man here. And like, should this be an issue, actually? Why is everywhere we go, people repeating this? I like, it's like, okay to say that, but imagine if they would say, hey, you're the only black guy here, because I was also the only black. That would be like, oh, no, we don't say you this. Don't this say is, that, this is appropriate. Huh? But saying I'm the man, that's okay. That's okay. I was like insulted, but I found it very interesting. Let's say I found it interesting to notice that was really like something very noticeable or something. Like, oh, you're the only guy. Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's actually really interesting.
If you start focusing on this topic, then
we could actually make a total different podcast about that. Oh, wow. No, I really liked how you really looked into, especially fatherhood, you know, because I've never known. I mean, it is known that fathers, I mean, especially like in this social departments, there are not always, you know, really involved. And but then, like, is it just because it's the social workers that don't think about involving the dads, or is it just because, like, the dads don't want to be involved? Like, do the dads actually want to be involved? That's what I'm wondering.
Well, that is a very, very interesting question. And actually, it is a pattern, in the sense that if the social worker doesn't invite you to participate, then will you feel motivated to participate? So it is, how shall I put it? If a father is not invited because he's not involved, and we don't bother to invite him, then we give him the message, it's okay not to be involved.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then you start getting this vicious circle. Yeah. So yeah. I think, and it's an interesting question, because in my opinion, I have seen a lot of, and social workers, and it's not of bad intention. It's just because they're also influenced by the society and by the patterns that are present. I've seen a lot that were more worried when a mother was not involved than when a father was not involved. Like if I would say, hey, professionally, yeah? Mm-hmm. I'm working with this guy, in fact, this kid who's 15 years old.
Yeah.
And his mother hasn't been around for 3 years. Or I would say his father has not been around for 3 years. I'm sure that people will consider the absence of the mother more problematic than the absence of the father. And that is interesting. Why do we make this distinguish? And because we make this distinguish, we also give our children the perception that they need a mother. A father, that's
bonus.
That's a bonus. Eh? That's a bonus. But children need a mother. That's also the same discussion about same-sex couples that, for example, two guys want to have a kid and they have a kid. Then there are people saying, yeah, but children, they always need a mother, no? Mm-hmm. Or the other way around, people need a father, because by saying this, you're like installing this expectation and image of a father has a certain representation, has a certain features that children need, and a mother has other features that the kid also needs. So we're making things very complicated by putting so much weight on a difference that is maybe not so very big. My opinion, that is BS.
If I can ask a question on that, just especially, you know, like with the statement that you were telling me that every child needs a mother and needs a father.
That's not what I say. Yeah?
I don't know. I'm sorry, but I mean society. I mean, yeah, just yeah. Like Joe. So, like, do we keep that intact because we believe that the connection that a child has with his mother is different than like with his dad? Just, you know, like
it's all connected. I will give you an example. If society believes that mother are emotionally are very good in communicating about emotions.
Yeah.
And fathers are good in action and irrationality and so on and so on. Huh? Then we give our children also this image. In fact, actually, it's more complex because we have this image. People will behave conform this image. It's like this, they did this interesting research in a school that when a teacher tells a student, you're not really smart, or the teacher doesn't even say that, he only thinks this, mm-hmm. Yeah, he thinks this student is not really smart, then after a certain period, we will see that this student is behaving, confirm this behavior and thoughts, inner thoughts of this teacher.
Wow.
In the sense that if I think you're not so smart,
I'll start
then
behaving.
I will not give you the word. Huh? If I ask, hey, okay, who's going to solve this problem?
Yeah, you won't.
And I think, oh, you're not so smart. Then I will never ask you.
Yeah.
And because of this, you will feel less competent, less self-esteem, and so on and so on. And so, and after some while, you will behave like somebody is not really competent.
Okay, I see.
So that's the same thing. If we look at men that as less communicative about emotions, what do you think going to happen? Then they will confirm to this image. Then they, I'm talking general. Huh?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So this, let's say this person, this man that is lived in this environment that is saying constantly, men are, they have to be alpha, they have to be strong, communication, that's for women, emotions, that's for women. And he has a kid. then this kid can have a different relationship with this typical alpha dad than he has a relationship with his typical mother that is communicative and so on and so on. Then in that sense, okay, in that sense, then it's good to have that a child has a mother and a father, because so this society gave them a very different role.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. See, it's a very complicated thing. Yeah. It's a very complicated thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I say it's micro, it's meso, it's...
It's not just one factor, actually. It's just, you know, like a combination of all these yeah. things. Yeah. That's what you mean by micro, you know, like at home, eh? Something that you can control. But then the things that you can control are mm-hmm. are the macro ones, you know, like mm-hmm. school, social media could also probably be one of them.
For sure.
Social media. That's also something that parents also really can't control these days. You know, like kids, they have smartphones. They have access to a lot more information. A lot. Could social media also be a threat to the way how men could perceive themselves?
It can also be a solution. I think social media can go both ways.
Yeah.
It can influence. I think if you're a big fan of a celebrity that is, let's say, no, I will not name people, but let's say the celebrity that is very sexual in his performance or her performances, has a very a figure, a body that is very slim and so on and so on, then it has an influence on people that is follower of this person. But on the other hand, there are also people that use social media as a way to fight these social tendencies that yeah. are harming us.
And your reach is bigger on social media.
The thing is, social media is used by everybody. It's used by Trump believers and Trump haters. So okay, then it's the fight, is survival of the fittest or something. I don't think social media as such is a problem, but
it is how you use it. Or
yeah, I think people, let's say that the if there are Trump haters using social media, then the Trump lovers should use it also, because it's a powerful tool. So you need to I think social media is what I think is more harming is like pornography that is very accessible, it's very available for mm-hmm. children mm-hmm. and you have pornography that is very in my opinion, very dangerous for the perception we have on the other.
Yeah,
like I think there is a lot of female non-friendly pornography that finds it very normal to dominate women. Find it very normal to be. Focused on the male orgasm and not the female orgasm. So this is something I think is very worrying. It worries me. Yeah. Worries me. Yeah.
It also creates, you know, like false expectations of intercourse especially sure. like if you never had it, you know.
For sure, I am afraid that my son, for example, is not very talkative. Unfortunately,
you wouldn't say.
I still have. He's young. He's only 7. I still can work on it. But I'm afraid that one day my children, my son, my daughter, they will look to pornography. Maybe they don't talk about it with me or with their mother, and then they just continue with this idea that what they see on pornography, that is normal. It's normal to slap a woman in the face yeah. or to spit in her mouth. They are really terrible,
yeah, of course.
Terrible thing, fan, terrible, it's a terrible way of to get in contact with sexuality.
Of course. And if you know that there are these kinds of dangers out there, you know, especially on the internet, you know, of course, you have parental control, but you know, of course, that you can't control everything.
No.
So, like, is this again something that you will discuss with your kids at a certain age, or like how would you approach that, for example?
Well, there's not the solution. It doesn't exist, but I think it's communication. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Talking about emotions is very important. I think we should teach our daughters and sons that this is an important thing. And we should be an example. Huh? We should be an example. Because that's funny, because we were also talking about with this daughter of my girlfriend about the matter. Like, hey, do you talk about emotions?
And what did she say?
And she said, well, yeah, it depends. So it depends on what? Yeah, it depends which topic. Okay, so what are the topics you don't... I'm not going to say that. And mother, I want you to shut up. Don't say anything about it. So I think even it's okay that she doesn't say, but it's. I think we should keep on creating a culture of it's okay just to be vulnerable, because it's also something about vulnerability. Yeah. Brené Brown is a very interesting author that wrote a book about it, vulnerability. So that is something we should teach our children.
Yeah, in a certain way, we also have to like teach our children to be open minded about life in general, I would also guess.
Or I think we should teach them to be open-minded and to be non-judgmental most of the time.
so not always.
It's impossible to be always non-judgmental. If a person says, you know, there are people, even professionals, they say, I am objective, I'm neutral. I'm like, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
You're not. And it's okay not to be, but it's dangerous if you think you are. So just say I'm not, and then if you're conscious of this, then it's okay, then you can work with it. So no, you cannot always be non-judgmental, but it's good to try to be not judgmental. And if you're not judgmental, it's good that you're conscious about this.
Yeah, just being conscious and aware that you're being judgmental. Yeah. And just try to be less judgmental in a certain way.
The less, the better, I think.
All right. I've also find like this study, somewhere on Google. I can't say where, but the study implied that the lack of men talking about emotions is also correlated with an increased risk of certain anxiety disorders.
And anxiety. So I wonder, and if there's a lack of talking about emotions with women, then there's no consequences for, there's no link with the same disorders?
I mean, probably.
Because they're saying if men do not talk about their emotions, then there's a bigger chance that they will create, what was it?
Anxiety disorder.
To begin with, I'm not really into labels. Okay. I think they are handy. They can be helpful for people to know, okay, I have autism, for example, or I'm on the spectrum. It can be helpful, but so obviously today I see men and women, I see a big difference in how they deal with certain things. For example, youngsters, you have a lot of youngsters, female youngsters, or that are more, we call it, have more internalizing problems, which mean depression, anxiety, all these things that are more like an internal suffering, where we see that male youngster, they have more conduct problems in their behavior. They are aggressive, more like ADHD. You see a lot of more youngsters, male youngsters with this diagnosis. So there's a difference And I think it has to do with, for in a certain way, how we deal with our emotions.
Okay.
If you don't talk about your emotions, for example, then it can find a way through your behavior.
Okay.
Or addiction. You look for another way where
you're looking to escape, perhaps in a certain way. You're looking for a path for your emotions to.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I mean, if I'm allowed to say this, because they say men, they don't express, but then perhaps they express it in a different way by addiction.
Acting out,
yeah.
Yeah. So actually, what we say as a professional, we say that this male youngster is acting out. For us, that's a problem of secondary level. So that's acting out, but what's beneath it? Maybe because this guy, he is really sad that he hasn't seen his mom for 2 years. Then should we talk about, hey, stop acting out? Or should we talk about you're feeling sad? It's our job to look for what is the reason or what's underneath it. So, and that's a bit the problem with I think in our what we see at schools that you have youngsters that they act out and then they get they have to go away, they have to look for another school, and it only gets worse and worse and worse. And actually, if we take the time and the effort to look beneath, then we have another story. So, men have emotions. We cannot accept the idea that they cannot talk about their emotions. No, they can. And maybe they haven't, nobody taught them the language to talk about emotions. Okay, but then that is what we're gonna do. We're gonna learn this language. So yeah, obviously there's a link between disorders and how you deal with your emotions. Do you have people you can talk with? Do you talk about your emotions? What do you do with it? Maybe you do a sport and that is your way out. That is your way to deal with your emotions. I don't know. But also youngsters, women, they also have disorders. But other type of disorders, maybe. I find it very dangerous to put it like that.
Yeah.
And
like you were giving an example of youngers, you know, like in school, they're acting out because, you know, like perhaps maybe they have a difficult, you know, like home situation or et cetera. Yeah. But if, for example, we take an example of youngers acting out in school, I mean, I know, for example, in the school of my mom, because my mom is a teacher, they have like their own psychiatrist, you know, that can deal with these kinds of situations. But
the school has its own psychiatrist.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Which is not that common, right? I think. I mean, in my school, I didn't have one. I know.
I think it's a special school, no?
Not really, though.
No.
No, it's just a plain state school. It's.
Okay, that's special.
But it is special, but also my mom told me that she's really overworked because, you know, like they have a lot of these things.
So it's very important that when the teacher has the idea that a guy is acting out,
mm-hmm.
because he's not feeling well, because he's not happy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's good that teacher is going to have a talk with this guy. And if it's necessary, they always can have the support of a CLB. And then it's a CLB that can, because they are experienced and they are specialized mm-hmm. in all kind of disorders or problems, because it's not always a disorder. Disorder is a diagnosis. It's
yeah,
a diagnostical
yeah.
label.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their responsibility. But in general, the well-being of children is the responsibility of the society, of the family, of the parents, of the friends. So in my opinion, or that's what research has shown, is that there are several things that are important. And one of them, and that's a very important one, is network. Mm-hmm. So every people, of every person, every human being wants to be connected. Huh?
Yeah.
If I would meet somebody tomorrow, and this person, I would ask this person, if you really feel bad, who do you go to? If this person would answer me, nobody. I don't know who to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is really a problem, because it's a lack of a fundamental important connection. Because every person, and especially children, they want to have the feeling that they belong to somebody,
yeah,
that they belong to a network. That if they don't feel good, then they can always go to this person or that person.
They want to feel safe in,
yeah, safe and connected. So that is. That is a very important thing for us professionals to focus on.
Yeah, I really like this point that you made, because it also made me think, if we're looking at pure statistics, you know, of people going to psychiatrists, you know, or I'm just wondering, is it safe to say that women would tend to look for help faster than a man will too, that's coping with a certain problem? Because then I'm wondering, if the answer is yes, why do men wait so long to look for help?
I don't know what the answer is. I don't know the statistics, but let's say I would not be surprised if there are more women that will go look for help than men. And why is this? Probably because men grew up with the idea that they need to be strong.
Yeah.
And if you show that you are uncertain, that you feel unhappy and so on, then you are weak.
Yeah. So like you have to cope with your own problems. You have to deal with it as a man. Is that like the thing that society is telling us, you know? So like, if you're a man,
yeah,
you should be able to deal with yourself.
You should be strong. A weak man is also not attractive. How will we find a woman? That's not my opinion.
No, I know, in general.
Because a woman wants a strong man. That's what we want. That's what people say want. A strong man. A man she can rely on, and so on. So it's very important. It's a very, a very strong idea that a man should be strong. And by strong, we mean, yeah, that he doesn't need to go to a therapist or psychologist or whatever. In fact, these days, fortunately, it's less of a taboo to say, hey, I go to a psychologist or I go to a psychiatrist or whatever. But I think we're still in a progress. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
So I think I would not be surprised if there are more women that go seek for help.
And I also feel sometimes like that there is a sort of contradiction of the word strong, because I've already heard women tell me that they find it strong that a man can show his emotions. But I also know women that also tell me that no, like a real man exactly is somebody that, you know, like that can be vocal about something, you know, that if something would happen to her, that he can be vocal about it. So maybe, like, is it also the word strong that we're trying to redefine the meaning?
I find this a very dangerous redefinition, in the sense by stating that, wow, you talk about your emotions, you're strong, you're saying at the same time, what you're doing is very exceptional. That is, wow, that is. And we should normalize it. So I think, in my opinion, it has not the effect we want it to have. I should normalize. If my son talks about his emotions, I'm like, wow, that's really brave of you that you talk about your emotions. Then I'm saying at the same time, what you're doing is exceptional.
Exceptional, yeah. Which is actually just normal.
We should normalize it.
Normal pain behavior.
I have met a lot of people that say, as a guy, you're very communicative. You're not afraid to talk about the things you deal with, the things that bother you, or the things that upset you. And they say it as a compliment, but for me, it's not a compliment.
But then actually, they're already putting you in a box because they are saying, oh, you're exceptional. You know?
I'm a strange.
You're not like, like a normal man, I would say.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, could we also, like, is this the same case? I mean, I'm gonna take a total different example, but people, you know, like let's say when a father, you know, like he plays baseball with a son, or like, you know, he takes him on trips, and people are like, oh wow, you're a great dad, because, you know, like you really put an effort, you know, like into mm-hmm. your children. Oh wow, you're a good dad. But then actually, then I also think, why are we giving compliments, you know? Because I mean, like, if a mother does these things, okay, of course, like, we'll say, okay, she's a good mother. But I mean, for, it's as if being a good dad is more exceptional than being a good mother, because mothers, usually they're always there, you know, but being a good dad is exceptional. But normally, this is also something that I feel, like, in my own opinion, it should also be normalized, you know? I mean, like, why should you get credits for just being a dad? Because I feel like you're supposed to do these kinds of things, and still people in media are like, oh wow, you know, like you're playing baseball, you're investing in your kid.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point you're making, because we're doing both two things by this. One, we're being very severe for the mother. We say if you cook for the children, you read them a bed story, you put them in you play with them and so on, that's normal. We're not gonna applaud you for this. But if a father does this, then we're gonna say, wow, this is really great. So we're actually making this father, giving him the feeling that he's special, because he's just doing his job. He's just doing what parents does. So we make a distinction between the mother and the father, which is, in my opinion, very, very, very wrong. And at the same time, yeah. No, it's a good point. It's a very good point. And that is what I have seen. I have seen a lot. Very severe for the mothers and less for the fathers, it's not fair. Or we should give the mothers more compliments.
More compliments, exactly. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, like, we can't normalize one fact, but then, like, for the other gender, we applaud it. I mean, that's not being fair, right?
Yeah. There's this program on television. It's called Zorgen voor Moeder, of voor Mama, which means in English taking care of mother. So this is a program that it's with a very famous woman, which was a singer with Kadri, Christel Verbeek or something like that.
Yeah.
Who goes to mothers that are dealing with love problems financially, psychologically, and so on, and they're gonna have a talk with the mother to see what can we do to help you. So they're putting also this mother, the idea of a mother, on piedestal, because why do they call it this program Zorgen voor Moeder and not for a parent? And what is even worse is that I saw this program. I mean, it's an interesting program. It has a very terrible title, but it's an interesting program. And although the title is taking care of mother, there are also fathers involved. There are also fathers that they film. In fact, less than the mother, because they're focused. They're really focused on the mother. How do you feel? How do you manage to get up every day? How do you manage to be there for your children and so on? And I'm like, you know, as I said, I work for Kindergezin, and I think the best intervention I can do is involving the dad. So I get involved when there are really concerns about the child or the parents. So it is for me not thinkable that I'm gonna have invite the mother without the father.
Of course.
Because he is a big important partner. The same as the mother, actually. I don't want to make this distinction. So that's why in the beginning I said I find it interesting to talk about mothers and fathers, because if we talk about gender, then we see the big differences appear when we are talking about parenthood. Because there you see the big differences.
Yeah.
You see really the big differences.
I can imagine. Oh wow. Okay, that's actually very interesting. It's true.
You should watch the program. It's really
I will actually. Sorry, and what's the name of the program?
Zorgen voor moeder.
Zorgen voor moeder.
Zorgen voor mama.
Oh, okay. All right, then I think we're also going to come to our last questions for this topic. So within marriage, men, they feel a certain pressure, you know, because all of a sudden, especially I know like in my culture, they're like, okay, Nico, you're finally going to become the man of the house, you know, because now, okay, you're married and everything, you know. And I was just wondering, you know, like man of the house, like I was wondering, like, what does that precisely mean, like when you're the man of the house, you know, and what would be really expected from him, you know, from being a man of the house?
You asking me?
Yes.
So it's like it was a fictive example.
Yeah, a fictive example.
Exactly. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I can only speak.
Just like in your experiences, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Does that mean like
there is and the man of the house?
Yes.
What I think that means, or what I've seen that it means, that he's responsible for the household. He's responsible for the if the children will behave or not behave. He's responsible for the income. And maybe he has the last word when a decision has to be made.
Mm-hmm. So here's the one actually calling the shots, if I can.
He's calling the shots.
If I can say it like in plain words.
He's calling the shots. There are certain households where it's like very normal that the man has the last word. Yeah, he's calling the shots. In fact, he's calling the shots. He can have actually, if you look at it, it sounds even very interesting and attractive. The idea that if let's say me as a man has a discussion with my wife about buying a house, I want to buy this house, and she's I prefer the other house. Yeah, but I'm the man, so I have the last word. We're gonna buy this house. You have less discussions, you would think. Eh?
Yeah.
So it sounds even like sounds need to appealing. Make promotion for this. but these are patterns again. And the question is, where does it come from, and do we feel okay with it? Yeah. I mean, who am I to say that this is prohibited? It cannot be. It's unacceptable. Who am I?
So like you're saying, you know, like if it works in some households, then it's perhaps like their way of dealing with things, but you can't really judge if the man of the house should be the one calling the shots or not. Is that what you're
it's
to
not
say?
For me, but that's my personal opinion. That's my personal opinion. But if the woman is happy and the man is happy, hey, yeah, go have a happy life together,
maybe something totally different. But I'm just curious, what do you think about it? Do you feel that in every relationship there should be a dominant type?
Wow.
For the household to work well, I'm just curious. It's nothing that I've written or something.
I don't believe it. In fact, I think household can work with that, but I also think household can work also without a person being dominant. Maybe sometimes the man calls the shots for certain things, and sometimes the woman calls the shot for certain things. I don't know, but I also gave therapy to couples, and if it doesn't work, then they come ringing my telephone or my doorbell.
Yeah.
And if it works, then okay, then it works. Some, you know, there's a very personal preference. Huh? Some people like a dominant partner. Okay. Some people like it. Mm-hmm. They like to be like
told what to do.
Or somebody that you have couples that, for example, the man is very undecisive.
Yeah.
Then he's very happy that his partner is very decisive, and the other way around. So is it dominant? Is that, yeah? I cannot. Mm-hmm. It's unfair to say this is not okay.
Because I just know, for example, you know, like I mean, like within my environment, you know, like in Dutch we have this word that we use, sloof. Huh?
Yeah.
So that is something that, I mean, like, I think it's interesting to think about, you know. So like you said, if the man is dominant, then people will be like, oh, okay, yeah, I mean, is there a way how to deal with it, you know? Then do we call the woman a sloof? But then when the woman is dominant, then we say, oh yeah, that man is a sloof. Huh? And a sloof meaning that he just listens to everything that his wife says without thinking about something, you know. So practically, actually, in plain words, we're calling the man a bitch because he can't think for himself. He's not being strong. He just listens to his woman. So having also that in society, doesn't that also put pressure on the man? Even for those, I mean, like, who enjoy being dominated. I mean, it's not a problem, like you said. Huh? It's just personal preference. It's whatever you like. Yeah. And if a household can... But then, again, even though if you're a man that likes being dominated, but then people will be like, oh, yeah, but this guy, he's a sloof. That makes things, again, harder for them. But maybe patterns?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's why, as a therapist, I put a lot of time and effort in finding out what is the subculture, the culture of this couple.
Mm-hmm.
What is the dominant idea in the system they live in?
Okay.
Because it's a nice example you give. Yeah. Sloof is an insult, actually.
It is.
It's an insult.
Great insult.
Like, yeah. Man up. You're letting your wife tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is not okay. So maybe you feel okay with this. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, my wife has a strong personality. Huh?
Yeah.
It's also interesting, the words we use. Huh? It's very interesting.
It's just to mask it, actually, in certain ways.
Yeah. Like, for example, I know, I was telling somebody this story, but I forgot how it went. But there is, I remember there was a couple. They broke up, and the woman did not want the man to tell others that it was his decision. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And on the other side. So this in this example, I talked about this with others, and it was interesting what the reaction was of the others. The others, they would say, yeah, but for this woman, it's very painful to say, my man took decision to leave me. But the other way around,
yeah.
If a man would say, my wife left me and I don't want people to know, then they will call it an ego problem. You see the difference?
Yes.
So with a woman, it's like, oh, that's emotional, that's for her self-esteem, and so on and so on. But if a man has the same vulnerability and feels uncomfortable people knowing this, then it's an ego problem. So emotion. For the same situation, it has a different qualification depending on the gender of the person. So you see what I mean? It's very complicated. It's a very complicated subject we're discussing today, because it the influence of society is very intrusive, it's very strong, and we don't even know it, we don't even see it, we don't even realize it. And even though if we do realize it, how can we change it? Because it's strong, it's very strong.
Exactly, yeah. And it's everywhere. Like it's everywhere where you go. Like,
yeah, especially if you grew up in a system that says the man has the last word, the man calls the shot, and you fall in love with a woman, and I call it strong personality. I can say a dominant woman, mm-hmm. or I can say a strong personality. You see, words. The words we choose influence also how we look at things. Anyway, that's another chapter. But
it won't work.
You fall in love with won't work, because you will not have this the support of the system of your friends and family and so on and so on.
No, of course not. Yeah, because then it will be like, yo, why are you being weak and everything? You know,
And in some way, then things changes. Like, hey. You should stop bussing me around, you know? You should this, or I'm not happy you saying me suddenly, because you get reactions of certain people, of friends and fans and colleagues, whatever. You start creating a relationship problem that wasn't a relationship problem, but interesting.
it's really weird. Like, I never understood, you know, like, why there's this whole problematic with women with a strong personality. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, like, for me, I don't have a problem with that. You know, like, the thing is, there just has to be mutual respect.
It's a social problem.
A social problem.
I mean, of course. It's bigger than that. It's big. No, but...
But men are also, like men... are also like capable of just putting pressure on other men. For like, we also we keep that also intact, like you
for
said.
Sure, it's like me telling my son, "Hey, are you crying? Really? Are you crying like a girl?" Yeah, that's putting pressure on my son that he should man up, or be like this. So, and I as a man am telling this to my son, because I don't want him to be weak. I want him to be strong. I'm just giving an example.
Of course. Obviously, yeah, no, of course.
I do not tell my son this. But the fathers that do, or the men that do, is because they also grew up in this idea that men should be this way or this way. And being aware of it's not enough, because you can be aware of this and agree with it. Yeah, I know that this is an idea that men should be strong, but I agree. It's convenient to agree.
No, it is true.
It's convenient that my wife consider men as men that find difficulty to talk. Mm-hmm. Difficulty to talk about their emotion. I'm like, okay, so I don't need to talk about emotions. Great. Phew! Because that's really exhausted.
Stress relieved.
Yeah. So these are our patterns we need to, if we want to change it, we need to break it.
Okay.
And it's not easy.
All right. I think we've discussed a lot already today in particular. Like my last questions are actually, you know, like if you could, you know, like give advice specifically, you know, to men that really have difficulties, you know, like seeking help, what would that be?
I think to put it in the words of Brené Brown, is that vulnerability is the birthplace of growth, of health.
Yeah.
of so many things. So in my opinion, it's my desire that people feel the courage and strength to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Obviously, not to everyone. You should feel safe to be vulnerable.
No, of course, yeah. Pick the person.
So if you're in a relationship, for example, with someone and you don't feel safe to be vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
to express your emotions, your opinion, mm-hmm. how you feel, then you should reconsider if this relationship is healthy for you or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my advice.
Yeah.
I'm a strong believer of this is a powerful thing to be vulnerable. It's a birthplace, in my opinion. In the opinion of Brené Brown, actually, of growth.
Yeah, yeah. Dare to be vulnerable. Yeah.
What?
Daring to be vulnerable.
Yeah, but with the right people.
Right people, of course.
Yeah. And if you don't feel safe, then you should reconsider, what am I doing here? Why is this difficult for us? What can we do about it? I'm not saying you should say, hey, you know what? Go fuck yourself. can we use that for?
Yeah, no, of course. No worries.
Yeah, you should.
We don't use filters here.
You should look away to talk about this, which is also vulnerability.
No,
obviously,
of course.
But, yeah, I think that's really, really, really very important.
Yeah, I mean, one step to change is already talking about the topic, you know.
Yeah, if we keep it inside of us, then we will pay the bill in another way. You cannot force people to open up. You cannot force people to change. But I think it would be it needs motivation, strength, courage to work on that. That's self-growth, and that you need certain elements to start doing that. And that's courage, that's motivation, that is strength, yeah.
Okay, no, that's really beautiful said. Then I will come to my very last question, is what do you hope will change in 10 years regarding men and mental well-being?
What I think is, I like,
it could be a long shot, but
yeah. Oh, well, what I see is that today we, the different generations, are talking about gender. So that's already a very good beginning. I see that this conversation is going all over the places.
Yes.
Like there is no gender, or there is I have a certain gender, or I have no. Yeah. So it's a very complicated conversation, but it's good that we're talking about this, because actually, in my opinion, gender is something that society constructs. It's something, when we say a man has to be this, or a woman has to be that,
it's society that decided
that is not nature that told us to be like that. That's people who are saying this.
Yeah.
So
we chose the norms. We chose, you know, like what's right and what's acceptable.
Exactly. And if you can predict things, then you also can change things. So if I grew up in an environment that is very, very binary, very masculine, feminine, then I can predict that there will be certain behavior that will be linked to manhood, and certain behavior that will be linked to femininity. So it means I can change it also. So I think we're changing the story, or today people are talking about it. So I think eventually it will change, and then I hope that this pressure of what you should be because you have a dick, so you should be this or you should be that. I hope we can feel more free to determine what you think you want to be.
I'm not just trying to like fit in the box, you know, like this, you know, like this accomplishments that you have to do just because you said that you're a male or a female. and just really decide, you know, like where you want to go, you know, like where your goals are.
Yeah. So. And also, that's a very important side note, that it's not replaced by another box.
Oh, okay, I see what
you because you can replace. Because, yeah. Okay, we don't talk about men.
You can
women,
put something out of a box and put it in another box.
Yeah, because if you look to sexuality, for example, there are so many. You have heteroflexibility, you have sapiosexuality, you have pansexuality. So there are a lot of boxes. And I'm like, wow, I think these people were actually against all these boxes, but we are creating more boxes.
Oh, that's cool.
So I think we should think about this.
Yeah. Just because it's things that we use. I mean, like, we use labels just because we can understand them, perhaps, in a certain way.
Yeah, and it is handy because it helps us to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to, if we use a label, let's say, non-binary, and we give it a definition, then it helps us. Okay, when we talk about non-binary, then we know we're talking about this or that. Or cis man, cis woman. So we have all these labels and definition. It helps us to communicate. But at the same time, it creates a lot of complication. Like, who are you? Are you a cis man or cis woman? Are you this? I don't know. Today I felt like a cis man, but today I feel more like a non-binary. It's maybe it's getting a little bit complicated by making all those different labels. So, but hey, okay. Sometimes there's chaos, and then you get it's just a phase, maybe.
No, of course. I mean, like everything, you know. Like, we'll just try and take baby steps, you know, and see.
Exactly.
I mean, how we're gonna make it work for us.
Maybe I will not witness it anymore.
Let's hope you will. Let's hope with you will.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right. Anyways, I think we'll wrap this up. So Nizio, I would really thank you for coming on our podcast. I mean, I really enjoyed this talk.
Me too. It was interesting.
I've already learned a lot. That's why I also like doing this. Yeah, it was really interesting. So I'd really like to thank you. Again, a big thanks to Nizio. Thank you for coming. And this was another episode on Men Talk 2. So if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe on the button. And then, we'll see you guys on the next episode. So you guys know what to do. And of course, on the last note, stay blessed, people.